Sally Rhine Feather from the Rhine Research Center, and our website is www.rhine.org. And I hope that I'll hear from some of the listeners with some stories. And you are now listening to Ghostly Talk.
You are listening to Ghostly Time with your hosts, Doug and Scott L.
From EVP to ITC and friends, this is Ghostly Talk.
It's been a friend show today, I have to say. I was really excited about this show because we're always working on getting new people that we haven't met before, and we're trying to get new ideas, new things for the show. But it's always fun to have a show where we pack, you know, previous guests in and people that we've met in person or have talked to and had a great time with. And this is one of those shows. I hope you're enjoying it. I am.
Really working out.
If you're not enjoying it, well, I am.
So.
Go right ahead. I'm going to shut my mouth.
Here we go. You really did. Dr. Stephen Rourke joined the CPRI team in a consultant capacity in the fall of 2004. His main thrust is EVP research and cognitive enhancement via novel technologies of brain entertainment and induced states of consciousness, cognitive to learning, and sociocognitive development. Dr. Rourke has experience as a professor of physics for Loyola College, has a BA in communications theory, has earned a Master of Science degree, is a PhD, and is currently pursuing a postdoctorate research degree.
You can explain that to us in a minute.
Yeah, when people are that educated, I sort of fall off over the edge after PhD. I don't know. But in the cognitive sciences, is that educational doctorate? What's EdD?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. His educational.
The idea is that a philosophy degree is one that is awarded for original research, but it doesn't have to necessarily be an entirely new study per se.
Ah.
Whereas EdD research is not philosophical, it's more applied research. So you have to actually conduct unique and novel research and contribute to the literature of your field.
And we know you're doing that. Let me finish this and we'll bring you in. Although that was already part of the show.
Yeah.
His educational doctorate research has brought him to consult with Jim Hale and CPRI on technical matters related to cognitive enhancement via novel technologies of brain entertainment and induced states of consciousness conducive to learning and sociocognitive development, and to pursue a personal interest in EVP, a strangely related field of research, by way of M.A. Persinger.
I have to say, Dr. Rourke, welcome to the show again, and you just that bio just melted me down, so I'm really scared for the next hour, I have to be honest with you.
I think I have to put on my thinking cap, Dr. Rourke. You do, I have to say, we did meet, right, at the CPRI conference.
It was a pleasure.
Yeah. You absolutely amazed me, and I learned so much from the speech, from talking to you, and I went on the EVP workshop, and just absolutely amazing. It is so great to have you back on Ghostly Talk.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Doug mentioned, we got to meet down there, and by the way, people out there listening to the show or whatnot, we actually have, when we were at the CPRI conference, and Dr. Rourke, you were responsible for making this happen, as a matter of fact. You suggested, hey, why don't you tape all the speakers? And then archive this event. So we did that, right? And your talk is up on there for people to download in our archive section. So if you haven't done that, go download that. It's all free, of course. So just pull that down and listen to what Dr. Rourke has to say along with tonight. I'm shutting my mouth now. Dr. Rourke, the floor is yours.
I actually suggested somehow recording all of this for reasons of posterity because I'm a total pessimist. I thought maybe that the first annual CPRI conference might be the last, and that's no reflection on CPRI. You just never know how the popularity in our culture of such things might turn.
Mm-hmm.
The tide could change to, I don't know, where everyone is at, like, you know, terrorism conferences or something.
Yeah,
and it is true because, you know, if you came up with the formula for predicting social trends, right? I mean, accurately predicting trends in society, you would be like the most, but you know what?
You could predict
Madison
well. You
Avenue?
Could predict the future.
Yeah, Madison Avenue, and everybody'd be right on you. You wouldn't be able to shake them. So you would, and of course Wall Street, they would all be like right on you. You know what's going to be popular next week. So you can't, you cannot. Right now, it's very difficult to predict with accuracy what's going to really intrigue people. And you know what about the taping of the CPRI conference? What we would like to do with that eventually is use those tapes to help generate interest in CPRI 2, you know, mm-hmm. the next version, that you know, 2007,
mm-hmm.
In that one. I you know, as that approaches, we're going to be, you know, mentioning it more and more. You know, that we taped the talks last year. This is what happened last year. Come and join the, you know, the learning, the fun, the people, and shake hands with these folks and learn and have fun and you know, at 2007. Hope to generate interest in 2007's event, although I think there's going to be plenty of interest
there's
anyway.
There's plenty of
an
interest.
Amazing event already.
Yeah.
But you know, generate interest and get people excited about it next year as the conference draws near.
Oh, yeah, I'll certainly, in a consultant capacity, I'll be there to promote it. I just don't know if I'm speaking it, and that's probably a really wise move on their behalf, because I'm certain that the conference speakers were rated. And I'm I think the technical nature of my talk might have turned some folks off. But
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Go ahead.
I did too.
I thought you had one of the best talks at the whole conference. Honestly, Steve.
Yeah.
I didn't get.
You know, it actually just depends what people prefer, but. There's no personal affront taken. I would expect CPRI to do what is obviously best for the organization, and
mm-hmm.
I spoke as you know, more or less as a contributor. I don't really, it's not an ego thing, and I don't have anything to sell, so it's fine with me either way.
Well, I think it, perhaps you spoke at the right time in the right place, because you certainly. Taught us a lot, and we're out here talking to other people, spreading your ideas and your research and the fact that you're even doing this stuff, and so maybe it was enough.
Well, maybe so, and that hyper analytical thinking, which might kind of turn off some people, really lends itself well to this analysis of Spiracom and some new Spiracom information.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And really what is a proposal for new best evidence standards in EVP. It's been nearly, you know, half a century since the class rating system was cooked up, and we've really distanced ourselves in electronic voice phenomenon research from the inter-frequency interpretations, where people are using lots of white noise, static, and between station tuning, and so we've wised up a lot. It's just time, I think, perhaps we kind of codify what might be new best evidence standards, and maybe learn from our mistakes surrounding Spiracom. If folks aren't familiar, I know you provide that, and I can give a quick background on Spiracom if that might be helpful for the audience.
Let's do that.
I always want to hear about Spiracom.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, we're going to both shut our mics off now, but we
yes.
want to hear this.
We want to hear what you have to say about Spiracom, yes.
Okay, well, jump in. I know... I sometimes may speak over you a little bit because I think there is either a delay or it takes a while for me to hear on this particular earpiece, but here goes.
All right.
From the mid-1960s to the early 1980s, research was conducted by the Metascience Foundation. That's their self-named. They were based somewhere out of North Carolina. And they were working on the development of a system of communication with what they called the dead. There were two inventors, George Meek and William O'Neill, supposedly developed a machine essentially containing sophisticated audio electronics that allowed actual two-way conversation with what they termed the afterlife. They nicknamed it Spiracom, and I believe they got up to what was a Mark IV version,
mm-hmm.
supposedly with three others. And unlike ordinary EVP, where a participant has to wait and play back recordings to hear anomalous signal to noise, or just call them anomalous voices.
Mm-hmm.
The Spiricom device is supposed to allow, you know, real time two way communications, or what O'Neill termed direct voice. Direct voice from where is the real question, and it was alleged in all of their literature and by O'Neill and by Meek himself that this was in fact by some contact with the entities beyond the grave. That's another quote.
Mm-hmm.
The project was officially defined as, and I quote from the Spiricom manual, an electromagnetic etheric systems approach to communications with other levels of human consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because I like to perhaps view EVP in its most authentic form, you know, the really class A, crystal clear, ambient noise background, no additional white noise, no radios involved, crystal clear, anomalous voices on tape or, you know, on flash drive or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I like to consider those possibly an artifact of human potential, and I don't know if that's entirely true, that it's some kind of, you know, thought impression that somehow is mitigated by the atmosphere. It ends up on the tape or flash drive. I don't know, but it's one thing someone has to consider.
You're sounding like Dr. Rourke. You're sounding like a parapsychologist all of a sudden.
I like to consider all possibilities and then kind of exclude them through. In science, the best you can do is exclude them through falsifiability or what's called Occam's razor, where you essentially line up the evidence and you look at the – you distill the data set and you line up the evidence and you can make a conclusion. It doesn't mean it's, you know, right. It's just a conclusion based on best evidence, which I think, again, comes back to our key here. The key is what we consider best evidence, and the waters perhaps have been kind of muddied by – well, I could state – categorically, they've been muddied by Raudova, who did a lot to popularize the field. I just think he might have done more damage than good, and through his egomaniacal, polyglot, multilingual EVP rantings, I think he probably set the field back as many years as he popularized it, but that's just my opinion. But it is possible that Spiricom, too, if we learn some things that, well... some things that may disprove the Spiricom story as contacting entities from beyond the grave, I think we may find that we really need to improve our standards of best evidence, because Spiricom is considered, you know, one of the best cases of two-way communication with the dead in popular, you know, paranormal culture, which admittedly is a subculture, but it's a subculture full of really smart folks. I mean, I know this because I met them and I spoke with them and I respect them.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, these are, I mean, every group has its, you know, its parade of Looney Tunes, but I'm talking about the organizers and the researchers and the folks that are willing to approach it with rationality.
Dr. Rourke, remember that we are deeply, deeply interested in Spiricom, and we're deeply interested in ITC and, of course, EVP. So, I'm not disparaging parapsychologists. I really think that, you know, the work that they do is obviously invaluable. And the fact that you're thinking in so many different ways, you're like willing to embrace that, you know, the thinking that, hey, these voices could be coming from within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Not just, you know, floating about in the air, and they could be coming from floating about in the air, and they could be coming from, you know, errors in the electronics, and they could be coming from, you know, they could be coming from anywhere. We just really don't know at this point. And I really honor that, you know, that you're thinking of all that stuff.
I could probably be considered one of the greatest skeptics in the field, because I have the longest list of possible mundane and prosaic explanations that I don't think others have even... I mean, it's common to hear folks say, hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
Okay. It's common to hear folks refer to cross-modulation and stray radio traffic. and that's obvious. Mm-hmm. Others have suggested, you know, just plain fraudulent EVP, and of course, with some portion of the data set, that's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
But my research has brought me to a few other potentially mundane, kind of ordinary explanations. They're a little arcane for Monday explanations, but they might do it, like apophenia, which I discussed at the conference. It's the spontaneous perception of connections and meaningfulness of potentially unrelated phenomenon. And
mm-hmm.
you see this in people who believe there are no coincidences and things like this, or an example of visual apophenia, to take it out of the EVP realm for a second. A man I respect greatly, but who nonetheless himself must have considered he may be a victim of apophenia, is Richard Hoagland with the Space on Mars, for example, or,
mm-hmm.
or when someone finds, you know, Mother Mary in a grilled cheese sandwich or something.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure it kind of looks like that to them, and they're recognizing certain, you know, characteristics, but they make more of it than it is, and it's not entirely their fault. Some people's brains are simply geared toward perceiving certain geometries better than others, like clearly
know.
Is the case with Richard Hoagland.
I don't know. I saw the grilled cheese sandwich, and a picture of it anyway, on the internet, so it must be true. And it really did look like, you know, Mother Mary, I'm telling you. But no,
did they eat that thing?
No, it went for sale or something.
Oh, okay.
Right.
They froze it, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
What happens is, with Spiracom, the Spiracom Mark IV, I think it was that the successful one with the voices and the tape?
The latest version, which was, I believe, the Mark IV, like you said, Dr. Rourke.
Well, it's reported that there was a Mark V, but again, I don't know. The Mark IV is the one that we hear on the tapes, evidently, but to say it was a success is also kind of overstating the case, because only Bill O'Neill could function the Spiracom. It would only work under his direction, as if he were completing an electrical circuit when he sat at the controls, which Bill O'Neill fancied himself a psychic, and I don't know if he was or wasn't. I'm not disparaging Bill O'Neill.
Mm-hmm.
I think perhaps the tapes show that Bill O'Neill, if anything, is guilty of not asking poignant and pertinent questions to what is supposedly a deceased entity.
Well, yeah, there was a lot of talk. There was talk of fried cabbage.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk on there, which is just basically a whole bunch of BS, which if you or I had the supposed dead on the phone for less than 2 seconds, we would ask, you know, how are you contacting me? Are you? How about just the question, are you what we consider dead? That question was never asked to my satisfaction. I know that there's supposedly more Spiracom tapes, but they haven't been released. And perhaps the reason they haven't been released is because the tapes don't bolster the Metascience Foundation theory. They might undermine it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the selective release of data. If you don't release it all, you can almost paint a limited picture, and it's very helpful if the rest of the picture would have arrows pointing away from your theses or your hypothesis.
Well, here's what we have with Spiracom 4. We've got a Faraday cage, right? And inside the and the theory of a Faraday cage is you're not supposed to be able to it's supposed to not allow radiation, radios to, be heard in there and things like
mm-hmm.
that. On the inside, it's supposed to, the EMF and stuff is supposed to be gone, right? Except for what's happening inside of it. So, and then inside this Faraday cage, we've got the antenna of a transmitter, the transmitter itself, and a receiver, right? All of that is inside. So theoretically, and of course the operator of the device. So we've got equipment and a human inside of a Faraday cage. So I looked at the drawings in the Spiracom manual, and that's what it looks like to me. They had a transmitter, a receiver, an antenna, and an operator inside this cage. And part of the device was hooked up to the transmitter, or was it the receiver? No, hooked up to the transmitter, I think, was this thing that produces, what, the 7...
13
frequencies or something, and that's what the voice comes out of.
Let me give you an example of why voice. I question the validity of the Faraday cage.
I see what you mean now, I think. Yes, tell me.
Yeah, Bill O'Neill, he once gave testimony about having called his wife in to witness what he believed were apparitions, and oddly enough, they were in a fish tank. But the method by which he called his wife in, and I'm assuming in 1980 this was not a wireless system, but nonetheless, it wasn't a truly isolated Faraday cage, because he called her in not via a walkie, but rather via what back then, and I'm blanking out on this, on the name of it, an intercom. There we go.
Okay.
Which means that he had at least some other line of communication into this room, which is, that's problematic, unless Bill O'Neill was incorrect about that. And even then, the Faraday cage is a very complicated business. It's not a matter of putting up an umbrella when it rains. It's to really tighten off a Faraday cage. I mean, it's let's just say it's rather involved. You're attempting to delineate the space from every outside signal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can just ponder that for a moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, here's where I'm going. I mean, to give some quick background, the idea was to keep it kind of non-technical, because truth is, I'm not a ham radio operator, and I like to speak in generalities about Spiritcom, because when you get into the details, it's almost pointless. We don't know what was really in the guts of this thing, even though we have drawings.
Right. Well, my whole point was that, you know, if it was set up the way it says, you know, you've got your Faraday cage, you've got, you know, your transmitter, your receiver, your antenna, you know, everything in there isolated from the outside world, you know, EMF-wise, or, you know, radio frequency-wise, anyway, if it were a perfect environment, then how could he have affected the outcomes, you know? But I see what you mean.
That's where I'm going with it, because first understand that the systems worked essentially using a high-frequency white noise generator that provided what they called a carrier wave for a ghost's actual voice. And the theory was, if a these are their ideas, not mine. I don't know if I would really even pursue this methodology to contact ghosts if there are such things. But the theory was, if a ghost could record itself to magnetic media, such as videotape or audio tape, by manipulating frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies, then the entity could manipulate the same electromagnetic fields produced by the Spiritcom machine and essentially create the synthetic voice we hear over a speaker through the oscillator of the noise generator. So it's pretty, I mean, all told, it's conceptually a pretty straightforward idea.
Yeah.
The experiments went on for quite a while. We have to say that these guys didn't fatigue easily. They certainly didn't quit. We'll have to give them that. It was quite impressive.
Oh, yeah.
The Spiritcom itself was hardly publicized, if at all, and most have called it pseudoscience because of the kind of loose nature of the controls, which...
Well, Dr. Rourke, I don't mean to cut you off, but I have to say, in regards to that, we just heard about this thing, like, what, 2.5 years ago?
Right.
And the only reason I found out about it is I was just haphazardly one night listening to Coast AM on Halloween, and Art Bell was the guest host that night, and he was playing these tapes. Outside of that, if I wouldn't have been there at that time, I would have never heard. Well, I may have heard about it by now, but I would have never heard about that thing.
Well,
right?
I remember seeing something on PBS a long, long, long time ago when I was probably a teenager.
Yeah.
So it's a really, really long time ago. But the and there was something about ITC, instrumental transcommunication.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that it had that on there. That wasn't what I was interested in, though, in the show. It was the video portion that I was interested in.
Yeah.
But I forgot. I don't know who made the show. I don't know what the show was called. I only happened to see it one day, like, after school, and thought that was pretty cool. But, you know, I was a kid, and my interest levels were all over the place.
Well,
you know,
that's the one thing I said, though, Doug, was when I found out about this thing. Well, go ahead.
And then you told me about it.
I'm like, why haven't we heard about this thing? We host a paranormal talk show. What's going on here?
Right.
What's wrong with
us? It's not very well publicized.
No, it isn't.
But at the same time, do you think, Dr. Rourke, that they, that the principals involved, did they genuinely believe, I mean, because they didn't, like you said, they didn't back down. They kept going and going. They didn't produce one tape and say, this is it, we got the proof, we're done. You know, you know, I mean, because that's what I might be like, oh, here we go, we got it. You know. And,
well, I wouldn't want to disparage them. I think fraud is a possibility, but it doesn't seem that there's any motivation for it. Because this idea of questioning the Spiritcom's authenticity, let's face it, it's in the back of anyone's mind who listens to it critically.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with critically popularizing it like we're doing, because if it proves to be true, it's best that we fully, you know, vet the internal consistencies of the tapes and the philosophy and ideas and proposals of this Metascience Foundation, because, you know, if we don't, someone else will, so we may as well think about it now. Essentially, I don't see the motivation for fraud. Brendan Cook from a group called GIFs first discussed his research, contemporary research, into the Spiritcom. Now, I want to give credit where credit's due. I hadn't even thought to do this rather obvious point, but, you know, just check out the validity of this dead contactee from the other side. And that's what Brandon Cook did. And all I did was reproduce his research, which he confesses he researched for a couple of hours and then went on the air.
Mm-hmm.
So what I've done is taken a few more than a couple hours. I've made a couple of days out of it. And those are a lot of hours. And, mm-hmm. And I've reproduced the research that originally questioned the authenticity, and I've also gone a whole lot further, deeper into, like, NASA passworded sites where they archive biographicals of their staff and things like that.
Oh.
Because I have a relative who works for the industrial complex, and so
okay.
There wasn't any hacking or anything. It's not illegal.
Yeah.
asked a favor and got in some places that aren't perhaps too easily gotten without questioning.
Right. Anyone, you would just have to fill out forms otherwise, you know.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of there's a lot of two-way checking before you're able to embark on some portions of NASA sites and background checks and things like that.
Okay, Dr. Rourke. Well, why don't we? I know we really want to hear about this. We need to take a quick break, though. Okay.
Bummer.
We need to. It's a short one. It's a really short
Good.
One. Okay.
It's the shortest break we have.
Can we take a break, Dr. Rourke? Is that okay with you?
Sure. And then when we come back, I want to wrap up what the claims of the Mark IV were, and then get into why perhaps we should further check into the validity of the Spiritcom.
Absolutely. Let's do that. Let's take a quick break. This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
I'm Doug.
And I'm Bonnie.
We have Dr. Stephen Rourke on the line. We'll be right back.
For more information, visit ghostlytalk.com.
Website www.bellwitch.org, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk.
Okay.
We'll be right back. EVP specialist, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal. If you want to find more information on EVPs, visit my website at www.evpor.com. And if you want to find more about my music, visit www.lanero.net. You're listening to Ghostly Talk Paranormal Radio, the only paranormal radio that works with you.
That the truth?
It sure is. Say that out. We want to get back to Dr. Rourke.
All right. I'm going as fast as I can.
All right, here we go.
Oh, it's gone.
This is one of those hours of ghostly talk that need to last for like 10.
I know.
But we can't do it. We have Dr. Stephen Rourke of VirginiaGhosts.com.
The CPRI group.
CPRI group.
God, what a great bunch of people.
Awesome people.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're talking about, of course, the ITC, pretty much everything ITC.
Spiritcom 4
and specifically. And we're finally getting down to brass tacks.
Oh, yeah. And I want to we want to continue where we were at before the break, Dr. Rourke.
We were talking about Brendan Cook, of course. He's GIS.
Yeah, GIS, and he also hosts Contact Beyond, another great radio show out there, so check that out.
He had done this research, and you had gone out and verified the research and expanded on that, and that's where we left off, Dr. Rourke.
Yeah, and so the Spiritcom tapes that we hear at first, I'm assuming that folks are going to do if they haven't heard the tapes themselves yet, that they would do the intellectually responsible thing and download it from your site and give them a listen so that they can kind of have a feel for the character and nature and the content of the recordings themselves, so that they don't think that this is just some kind of ad hominem attack on Spiritcom.
Mm.
Now, the Spiritcom device that supposedly worked best, it was insisted by proponents that the best reported contact was on a certain date in a certain year. It was April 16th, 1980. This was the initial best contact. Meeks and O'Neill claimed they were able to talk to a very clear voice of a deceased physicist, Dr. George Mueller, who was reported by the Metascience Foundation to have died May 31st, 1967 from a heart condition. Mueller explained to them, Mueller explained to them that he was once an associate professor of engineer and mathematics at Orange Coast College and gave some more of his curricula vitae, essentially. Miller's voice sounded like kind of robotic, buzzing through this hissing background noise of the ether, which the background noise itself, by the way, is a telltale. You can ask anyone down at Radio Shack if you're in a Faraday cage if you would have any background noise at all. They would tell you no.
Oh.
So that's kind of a dead giveaway that the Faraday cage, however great of an attempt, might have been compromised.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that in mind, you can imagine these guys who are heavily invested just spending years and months on this particular recording device, just documenting many hours of audio, and out of that, tuning in, so to speak, this supposedly deceased Dr. George Mueller. So here's where my questions come in. Again, the brainchild of another researcher, but I just kind of reproduced the research, which is standard in science, and took it a little further. So we have to look at a few of the key players, the Spiritcom players. It is considered, by the way, Spiritcom, why even look into this? It's considered the most convincing ITC work ever done, so it's important perhaps to look at what is considered the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
So George Meek, again, president of the MetaScience Foundation. He also funded the foundation himself. Bill O'Neill, a self-described psychic. He was the Spiritcom operator.
Mm-hmm.
There was a man named Doc Nick who came into the picture early but was so unintelligible on tapes as to fade later and make way for Dr. George Mueller, a self-described electronics engineer of solid-state physics, who was supposed to have died in 1967. For all the publishing that MetaScience Foundation did, though they claimed to have found the death certificate of one Dr. George Mueller, they never published it. Nor did they publicize his Social Security number, I guess, for obvious reasons. But it would have been a key point now to have those things and kind of just confirm it. So at the point of these best recordings, he was supposedly dead for 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
They contacted via Spiritcom Bill O'Neill from 1980 to 81. And so a lot of these details that were later confirmed by Meek include, and if I could just kind of ask the listeners to create two columns in their mind. We'll create a column that I will list all of the data points about Dr. Mueller that came from the MetaScience Foundation, supposedly from the tapes. Now, mind you, you never hear on the tapes that are released this Mueller confessing that he's dead and stating how to find his death certificate. That's supposedly on the other tapes that have not been released.
That's what they said on the tape, yeah. That's what they said on the ones that we have available on the site for download.
Right.
So we have to ask if these coincidences equal fraud or perhaps their evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go through, and we know that he was a senior staff member at Ramo Wooldridge from 1955 to 56, and then again from 59 through 60. We know that he's supposed to have died while teaching at Orange Coast College in 1967. And as far as publications go, we know that he is reported to have written an introduction to electronics textbook in 1947. And so here's my problem. There is another Dr. George Mueller who lived until 2001, well past 1967, and certainly well past 1980 and 81, the time of the Spiritcom recordings.
Yes.
And he, too, not only appears in his rather elderly state in the picture from the NASA website, he appears to be the very same Dr. Mueller with the same glasses, and I just did a brief look at his physiognomy. He appears to have, and again, this is not extremely scientific, but I printed both pictures and essentially matched faces, one on top of the other, with once resizing was done, most peaks and points match. And there are people who do this much better than I, folks at the FBI and stuff, and they can measure the exact distance between the eyes to the bridge of the nose to the lip to the chin and actually identify people
mm-hmm.
with precision.
Yeah.
So I suggest maybe someone out there might want to do that.
Anybody that works in the FBI.
But here's this same gentleman in 2001 who lived, and P.S., he was a senior staff member at Ramo Wooldridge from 1955 through 56. Then he left and came back from 1959 to 60. The Introduction to Electronics in the archives of the State Historical Society in Wisconsin, which was reported to be the 1967 dead Mueller's native state. Interestingly, the Dr. Mueller of 2001 demise was also born in Wisconsin. Now, digging through the NASA It's called the Glennon Webb Spiemens Project for Research in Space History, and it's essentially a NASA/NASA Ames research site where they have gone and interviewed key players in the Apollo program, things like that. It's interesting to note in these four different interviews, it's actually rather amazing to note, that Dr. Mueller was a ham radio operator. And in homage to his grandfather, it is reported that he used a nickname,
mm-hmm.
a Dr. Nick as a ham handle. Now, it's the same Doc Nick, maybe, that initially contacted Bill O'Neill on his device through some crack in his Faraday cage. Now, you need to know that the Spiracom device, essentially, was a receiver. Except Bill O'Neill believed when he sat down behind the pots and pans and dials and controls, he believed that he completed some psychic circuit and it would become a receiver for the ether and contact the dead. Well, it isn't really that unfathomable to consider that if someone builds a receiver and there's a ham radio operator with a transmitter, that at one point the two might marry.
Absolutely, Dr. Rourke.
You see, it's a matter of Occam's razor. Is it more likely that these two Muellers are the same, since they were employed at identical times through identical businesses? They did identical consulting work. The only issue, I guess, we have is this issue of him claiming he was dead and then living past it. And even that has a kind of boring explanation, maybe. I'm only guessing, because when I was young, my grandfather did a little hamming, and you don't have to be in the radio biz to know that there are lots of expressions for things, and even exaggerations, perhaps hyperbole in language, like that college job gave him a heart attack. It doesn't necessarily mean that he had a heart attack while teaching college, nor does it mean that if someone is using the word dead while on the air, that they mean that they are dead. It could simply mean that there are portions of the audio that's patchy on his end, and he's citing dead air. This would really explain why there's such, well, I don't know how to put it, but trite conversations going on. Things like, yeah, I just turned on the tape recorder, doctor, says Bill O'Neill, and Doc Mueller says, very well, William. And Bill O'Neill, a bit angrily, you said to hurry back, and I did. That's been exactly 1 week ago. That's interesting because oftentimes busy doctors who are project engineers for the industrial military complex, they probably only get on once a week. And interestingly, he kept popping up in these once-a-week patterns for a while, if you look at the data set of Spiracom as far as the dates go. He says, yes, ho-ho, cold weather has left us temporarily, said Bill O'Neill. And then Doc Mueller goes on and says, oh, wonderful, in response to Bill O'Neill's garden paragraph, Doc Mueller says, send me a couple of carrots. Bill O'Neill says, what's that again? Doc Mueller, the supposed dead entity from beyond, says a couple of carrots. Bill O'Neill, oh, carrots. Doc Mueller, yes, William, and a nice head of lettuce. And then they go on to discuss the fried cabbage and the sauerkraut and all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know about you. Maybe I just question O'Neill's tenacity, if nothing else. I would have had about 100 other questions besides the sauerkraut one. I don't know.
Well, Dr. Rourke, I pointed that out earlier about the cabbage thing. I mean, and I have to agree with you on that. I have to agree. And it struck me kind of funny also. I mean, aside from giggling a little bit, I'm like, okay, you're talking to a supposed dead person, and you're talking about fried cabbage and a nice head of lettuce. I mean, I remember hearing that. It was cracking me up, right? And I'm like, you know, okay. I mean, it made me laugh, but I know what we said it already. I'm like, and we've had, you know, supposed meet. We've had I shouldn't say supposed. I apologize about that. We've had mediums on the show who have channeled people for us on the air. And Doug and myself, Dr. Rourke, when this has happened, right? And I can't verify if it's the real thing or not. We're on the radio here, right? But these people came on. And they're like, you know, they channel, and then this person comes on and starts talking to us. And Doug and I look at each other like, we're literally like just like starry-eyed going, what? I have a gazillion questions to ask this person. To the point where we're like, oh.
And we've
right?
done this because, at first, of course, you know, when we know what's going to happen on the show, we go, well, you know, and then they're going to channel. And then we're like, oh, how is this going to go? You know, because we don't know. We're not positive that this is really going to
happen. Well, of course,
happen.
It's important to be skeptical, not just for the field and the endeavor, but it's a matter of personal intellectual honesty to be skeptical.
That's why I
question these data points that kind of coincide. Both Dr. Mueller's worked at the exact same companies and contractors at the exact same times, performing the exact same functions. So you've got time frame, function, and employment all coinciding. Both Dr. Mueller's wrote exactly the same textbooks that are held at exactly the same archive.
Mm-hmm.
Both Mueller's published the same peer-reviewed journal article about the same obscure topic at the time, especially, of electron physics. Both publishing about electron physics in a vacuum, no less, which makes it even more arcane. And all these coinciding data points, it just reminds me that we need a new best evidence standard, you know, lest we be kind of taken in by something in the future. And I'm not saying I've concluded that Spearcom is fraud, but I have reasons to doubt the authenticity. Number one, the mark for Spearcom tapes are narrated excerpts, which means
they've been edited.
Unedited info has not been released.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the participants and project coordinators of Spearcom are a combination of what could be termed fantasy-prone and invested individuals. I say fantasy-prone because if you read The Ghost of 29 Megacycles about the background of both individuals, while extremely open-minded, and I commend them for that, they were both on spiritual and meta-scientific, metaphysical kind of paths, which doesn't make them bad people, but I think when one is a self-admitted psychic, for example, with no evidence beyond believing he cured someone of an illness here or there, you might turn the fantasy prone.
Mm-hmm.
The conditions also were not controlled, really. I mean, there was a record of the account and an attempt at a Faraday cage, and there's also the problematic issue of, like, the ex post facto interpretation of the data set in the form of excerpts. It may not entirely be Meek's fault. I mean, he was sent maybe not all of the tapes by O'Neill, and so Meek is left to, you know, he's invested. Meek is funding this O'Neill, and it's O'Neill's paycheck to continue this, you see. I'm not saying that these are overt motivations. I'm just saying that there's an interdependency that is extremely unhealthy for scientific thought to say that this founder is invested and is funding an individual who, if no longer perpetuates what the founder and funder wants, no longer has a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
You can admit that there's a bit of a tension there.
Absolutely.
Also, O'Neill built a receiver, and ham radio operators use transmitters. It's not odd that they would marry eventually. The dialogue was trivial. This is my fifth reason for reasons to doubt the authenticity of Spearcom.
Mm-hmm.
The dialogue was trivial and indirect, really, about the issue of the afterlife. As if, and I know this is an allegation, but just let me state it and people can take it for what it's worth. It's as if O'Neill, the operator of the Spearcom, avoided asking the questions which would elicit a response that might shatter his fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, rather than get too overt in the conversations, if he just keeps talking about cabbage and carrots, he'll never have to shatter the mythos of the afterlife and the fact that he is so special as to be the only one who can work the Spearcom and communicate with this dead physicist who lived until 2001. So there's plenty of reasons why we should doubt it, and perhaps plenty as to why we should believe it, but I think they both have to be weighed on the same scale is all I'm suggesting.
Well, obviously, in the next dimension over, Mueller died in 1967. But I don't know. Okay, that's not obvious.
It's not obvious.
This is something
well,
that
no,
I
you
just
laugh, but actually that was my...
What if it's a dimensional thing, you know?
Yeah, that was the third thought I had, that folks like Jenny Randles and Dr. Kip Thorne have hypothesized on time storms, that if there are multiple universes and parallel dimensions, that there may be a time when the two bubbles that make up these multiverses kind of rub, and you'd have these divergent timelines coexisting momentarily, or at least at certain points in history.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't it be wild if there were this death of Mueller, and yet we're living the version of the many worlds interpretation of quantum physics? If we're living this many worlds interpretation, we're living the version where he lived till 2001. Who knows?
Well, that, in my opinion, that would dwarf the Spiricon project if that was the case. I mean, the Spiricon project.
Well,
is fascinating.
If it fails in contacting other, you know, the other side, you
mm-hmm.
know, when after somebody has passed.
Yeah.
What if it succeeds in contacting the next dimension over from here?
Or another timeline.
Or
like,
another timeline.
Yeah.
The movie Frequency. You could almost say that the Meta Science Foundation had written the plot for the movie Frequency, and they have every right to sue.
Maybe. This is all absolutely incredible.
I am just floored right now.
There's so many possibilities, and there's like about 10,000 directions I want to go.
But we got about two
minutes. But we have 2 minutes
left.
It's not going to work.
All right, well, how about this for a cliffhanger?
All right.
How about another show? I'll propose what I think should be the new best evidence standards for electronic voice phenomenon. Again, I'm leaving ITC as an overarching field aside for the moment and just focusing on EVP.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'll propose that, and we'll do a short history, because I understand there were folks on asking questions about Edison and the like, and
yeah.
the involvement of everyone from Tesla to Marconi in the pursuit of contact with the afterlife, and most of that is true, but some of it is internet rumor. We could perhaps clear some of that up and then
yeah.
discuss what could be the protocol for the future regarding EVP, the new best evidence standards.
What we're going to do, all right? This is what we'll do.
I want it to be a separate show.
It will be a separate show. What I want to do, Dr. Rourke, is I'm going to call you tomorrow, okay? And we will set up a date in the near future, the very near future, if that's okay with you, to do this thing. Would you be cool with that?
Sure, that'd be great.
I'm going to call you tomorrow about
that. This is information that needs to be out there, because you've just both astounded me and shattered my world, and
you have.
You did it all in 1 hour.
Because I'm telling you right now,
I've made a lot of people angry as well.
That's fine, because that's going to elicit fault. Elicit thought, though, too, I think. And that's good, because honestly, Doug just said it. He just said it. He's like, you shattered my world. Because I have to say that the Spiricon project is one of the things that we got into studying that really steered the direction of this show in a lot of ways.
For 2 years.
Okay?
And if there's doubts about the Spiricon project, I want to know about it.
Absolutely.
But I also want to talk about things that have happened since Spiricon. Unfortunately, you know, Ghostly Talk's only 3 hours
yeah.
a week. And,
only.
And so there's so many things that we've really got to dig in and
yeah.
sink our teeth into and say, you know what? What should be the direction we're going in?
And we're not going to let this one rest. We're going to do this. We want to know
how our research, how what we're thinking about and how what you're thinking about and how what folks out in the field with recorders are doing, how should we be moving forward?
Absolutely.
And I suggest we make it an interdisciplinary effort. Someone who does this, like facial recognition or what's called split physiognomy, where they research the condition, the physical features of a person's face, perhaps someone could identify the 2001 Mueller and tell us it is the very same 1967 Mueller. Who knows?
I would love to see
that.
We
need to do that.
Dr. Rourke, I'm going to call you tomorrow. Hang on the line, though, okay? Because we're going to, I think, in my opinion, it would be irresponsible broadcasting if we did not follow this up again with
Dr. Rourke. Irresponsible is us as ghost hunters.
Absolutely. Because
we absolutely have to.
You're right, Doug. I mean, what we've talked about and what Dr. Rourke has presented here tonight really has shattered a lot. I don't want to say illusions, okay?
Well, no, it's opened our eyes.
It's opened our eyes to a lot of new things here, and I hope it's done the same for you guys listening.
So, Brendan Cook and you, Dr. Rourke, and everybody, we need to talk about this thing.
We're going to do that, all right? Unfortunately, we can't do that anymore tonight.
No, not tonight. We are already over time.
To you tomorrow when you call.
Well, yeah, hang on the line for one second, Dr. Rourke.
Hang on the line, though, Dr. Rourke. Okay. We do have to close the show. We are over time. I want to thank everybody for listening. Keith H., Mike McDowell, Dr. Rourke, thank you for coming on the show.
Full Moon Radio is next, and I have to say, hi, Laura. It was awesome talking to you for like 14 hours the other night.
And with that, we will be back on the air next Sunday at 6 p.m. from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on your favorite internet and terrestrial radio station. This has been Ghostly Talk. I'm Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I'm Bonnie.
We're out of here. Bye-bye.
I need to go someplace where a man can think.
Listen to now.
Media, become the media.